Hello and welcome back to another episode of Promote the Hell Out of It. My name is Misael Trujillo and this is the podcast where I talk to people worth shouting about. I hope you are all doing well. I hope you've been enjoying your long bank holiday weekend if you're in the UK, and if not, that you're just keeping safe and doing the best you can considering current circumstances. So yeah, on this episode, I chat to my friend Danny Harvey, who works front of house for bands like Beartooth, Silverstein, Cancer Bats, has worked for Set Your Goals back in the day, also tour managers Silverstein, works for Tandon Management, managing a bunch of bands, and has just co-founded Sonic Workshops. With lockdown, everyone had to get smart thinking how they could get money, especially if normally you make your money working with touring bands, right? So Sonic Workshops offers one-to-one online mentoring with a bunch of real cool people within the music industry. So definitely check that out. All the links are below for the stuff that Danny is involved with, for the bands that he works with, a lot of really cool bands. So definitely check all the links out underneath if you're interested in ever working within the music industry and figuring out how you can get your toe in the door, as it were. Then this is a conversation for you. Pick up some tips, listen to a pro. And I am massively grateful for Danny giving up some of his precious time to chat with me. It was real good catching up. Someone I really appreciate. Very, very cool person doing some cool stuff. So yeah, enjoy. Let me know what you think. Buy me a coffee if you really enjoy it. Leave us a review. You know what to do. So how have you been coping with being locked up?
She's trying to keep busy, really. Like, that's the main thing, isn't it? Just keeping occupied, and rather than just... I heard someone say the phrase completing Netflix. So yeah, as long as I don't complete Netflix, I feel like I've succeeded.
You don't want to go into the depths of Netflix if you're getting to that point. Yeah, definitely. Although I've got to admit, I've got a bit of a soft spot for like crap, like B-side type films.
Oh yeah, yeah, you've got to, haven't you? I mean, you've got to take time to chill as well, don't get me wrong.
where are you? Are you in the UK?
I am, yeah. So I'm in Cornwall.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, so I grew up down here and then moved to Brighton for university, like, what was probably like 10 years, over 10 years ago. Oh, that makes me feel old. And then was lucky enough to actually move back before all this COVID stuff happened.
Awesome. Yeah, it's a good place to be, right?
Yeah, just in the middle of the country. And I actually moved back to my dad's to help save money. So it kind of timing wise worked out quite well.
Yeah, no, for sure. You've got to work things in your favor when stuff like that happens, and just think on the spot.
Yeah. And then I bought a house and it all went downhill from there. No, I'm joking.
So you've bought a house in Cornwall?
Yeah. So we moved in November. Yeah.
That's awesome. I'm really happy for you.
A lot more responsibilities though, isn't it? But
I can imagine. I can imagine. So 10 years ago, yeah, I think that's because I was trying to figure out when we met.
I was thinking this too.
I know the like era it was, and I know it was at a gig.
I want to say 4 year strong gig.
You want to say, I was going to say the Wonder Years, but it might have been.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Wonder Years in the Peel.
I think I've got a memory of it being like I want to say Fireworks, the Wonder Years.
Oh, I would kill to go to that show right now.
Yeah, I know. I think it was that era. And it's weird because I had Jimmy from Polar Bear Club on the show, and it really did bring out the like, crap, it was like 10 years ago. It's like a whole load of time.
I feel it's either that or I've got 4 years strong at the Electric Ballroom in my head, but yeah. I feel like maybe we knew each other then and we just saw each other then.
Because then I remember it must have been something, because I remember seeing each other at loads of gigs.
Loads, yeah. Like, maybe it was that. Maybe we just bumped into each other at loads of gigs and we're like, hang on a minute. We see each other at every gig.
It was weird, but you'd moved to, I guess you were studying at BIM, was it, in Brighton?
Just University of Brighton.
Oh, cool.
Not actually BIM, but still, yeah.
What did you study?
Music production. So I always wanted to go into studio stuff. like recording.
That's awesome. How come you knew you wanted to do that? Because that was pretty like, you knew what you were doing and you've done it.
Yeah, I guess in Cornwall, I had a little studio. So I had a band down here and recorded ourselves terrible band, but that's beside the point. Had fun doing it.
That's it.
Yeah, that's all it's all about at that point. And then I love recording it. I love getting involved in that side of it. Had fun mixing. I get some guy to come over to, we had this little shed in the garden. He would come over with some of his gear and kind of kitted it out, which made it even more fun.
Nice.
I was like, oh, I saw this new gear we've got. And then he would bring bands over to the studio too. And he would come once a week and it grew to like 3 or 4 times a week with different bands. So this studio kind of got a name from itself anyway. And then
that's really cool.
I was like, I want to do this. And then went to university. Obviously, I've always loved live music, loved it. Like ever since I can remember, I never really thought about doing live sound engineering, only just touring stuff. I don't know why. And then obviously went to uni, got a like friend that was doing live sound engineering, went to shadow him a bunch, and then got a job at Green Door Store.
Nice.
And that was my first like, yeah. Because when we met, I was probably still at uni and not doing live sound engineering like 10 years ago, probably. And then it just kind of, it happened pretty quick, to be honest. I think I was at Green Door Store like a year and then went on tour. My first band was Set Your Goals. I went on tour.
Oh, nice.
It
was like, that's a dream. That's so cool.
It was. Like, obviously, like 4 years strong, 1 year's going to those gigs, like Set Your Goals fit right into that. And I was just like, how is this happening?
That's so odd. Yeah, because I lost touch of you completely. For a while, and I remember bumping into you at Green Door.
Yeah, so I was probably working, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah,
because you moved to Brighton. What year was that?
7 years ago now.
Seven. God, time goes so fast, doesn't it?
So fast.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. Yeah, the last 5 years in particular have just been like...
Oh, scary.
I think when you start getting responsibility and you start like focusing on like, crap, I've got to like save up a bit and not just be spending all my money...
Yeah,
going to gigs and drinking, yeah, and merch and vinyl. Yeah,
we all still want to, though. Oh,
definitely.
Yeah,
definitely. Cool. So, set your goals. How did you adjust to being on the road? Was that okay for you?
I guess so. I was just like I felt like a little kid, excited. You know what I mean? Like, just the first tour. It was with Every Time I Die headlined.
No
then
way.
It was Cancer Bats. Then Set Your Goals, and then Make Do Amend opened.
Oh, amazing.
So I was just like, this is insane. Like, I remember picking up, it was a little like splitter van with bunks in from London, driving all the way to Berlin because the band were in Berlin. And I didn't really know what to expect. I really didn't. I was 22?
Oh, wow.
So straight out of uni. And I remember the first show being terrified, not really knowing what I was doing. I thought I didn't know what I was doing, but I guess now looking back, maybe I did because I'm still doing it today.
Yeah.
And learned so much. So that first tour, I think I learned more than I did my whole 3 years at university, maybe.
You got thrown in at the deep end, eh?
Big time. Yeah. The first show was, I think, 12,000 people. Like Empiricon Fest, Parkway Drive headline, I think. And I was just like, what am I doing here? But
was there anything you look back at that show now and you're like, holy crap, I didn't do a lot of stuff that I was supposed to? Or were you pretty on the ball?
I didn't go on stage during changeover. So I was so conscious of the console that I've never used before at front of house that I wanted to spend every moment that I had on it getting to know it.
Yeah.
So it was like I don't think it was a long changeover. Obviously, I can't remember now, maybe like 15, 20 minutes. I went straight to the board and just tried to like get familiar with it. And then first song, I was like, that mic is not on the right guitar cab.
Oh, no.
That guitar cab is just not on. So like having to try and talk to someone, like the in-house guy next to me in German, obviously. And I was like, the guitar. And he's like, what? And I was like, the mic's not on the right cab. And like, but maybe song 3, he figured it out.
Yeah.
On the right. And then I kind of settled in and... I still get nervous now, though, which I always say is a good thing. Like, I know if I'm not nervous before a gig, then I'm too complacent, if you know what I mean. Like, I want to feel those nerves. I want to feel that, like, pressure. Oh, I miss it.
I can imagine. Yeah. How long were you with Set Your Goals?
So I did maybe 3 tours with them, and then they kind of, that's kind of when they stopped touring.
Yeah.
So I think we did, was that tour, a bunch of festivals, Slam Dunk a couple of times, and then a UK headliner.
That's really cool.
And then Cancer Bats I went out with because of that first tour.
So it all joined up.
Absolutely. That's really cool. I even did merch for Every Time I Die for a tour or two from that tour. Networked myself.
This is it. That's what I was going to say, because you say you were 22 and you did like 3 tours to Set Your Goals. Most 22-year-olds hanging out with bands are going to be like super stoked to be that in that situation. Were you like quite aware that you had to be like professional? Were you trying to network at that point?
I don't think I was. It just kind of happened. I definitely didn't even think about, damn, I need to meet these other bands. I just wanted to meet these other bands in a way. And kind of the networking came naturally. I guess I've told people since, don't try and network, try and be friends with them and the network will come, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of, maybe I did that without even thinking about it.
So with Cancer Bats as an example, how were you hanging out with them because of being on tour and then they asked you?
Yeah, so I was also doing merch. So I was merch and front of house, which is not a great combination. It's a lot of work.
I was going to say, you're running out.
And Liam, who's the singer of Cancer Bats, does their merch a lot of the time. So I would hang out with him most nights just at the merch table. Obviously, we got friends chatting. And then kind of out of the blue, I don't think it was even that long after, maybe 6 months, I got a message from, I can't remember if it was Liam or their TM Stan, saying, do you want to come on tour with us in March? We're doing a UK headline. And I was like, yes. And just like, yeah, jumped at it.
And at that point, you're comfortable in the role. Like, you got comfortable with Set Your Goals. Or would you say that you still had figuring out to do?
I'm still figuring out things now, I guess. There's still things that I get and I'm like, oh, I do that. Or I see someone doing something and I was like, oh, I'll try that. Which I think is the great thing about this job, isn't it? There's also no right or wrong.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen people like look at someone's EQ, for example, and be like, oh, that sounds terrible. It's like, how do you know without seeing what's on the other end of it, kind of thing?
Yeah. Like, and does it change a lot as you scale up? Like, if the show's a lot bigger, does it become a lot more difficult?
I actually find it easier.
Really?
The pressures are definitely a lot more, but the mixing side is easier because you're not battling with anything. Like, you're not battling with maybe the stage volume of the band themselves or the room. So like going back to Green Door Store, it's so hard to mix in there. Brick rules, those cymbals are the loudest things in the world. And you just want to get those guitars and vocals above those cymbals. Yeah. But then you go to like a bigger... I remember mixing Coco and loving it because I actually got to use overheads. Like, I wanted to turn the cymbals up and I was like, yeah, this is, I'm in control.
Ah, that's so cool.
So cool. Yeah.
And what about the techie side of things? Is that something that you always enjoyed? Or like, because I've often found it's easy to want to be involved in music, but to go deep into the technical aspect of things is a separate thing, right?
Yeah, like I've always, technology, I guess I've always been quite interested in, even down to computers. I did computering at A-level, nerd, but
no,
like I
too.
Was always interested. Yeah, like I'm quite happy to be
huge
a nerd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Proud.
Yeah, proud nerd. So I guess, yeah, I've never been a full-on geek with sound engineering in a way, though. Like there's definitely people that I've known... I'm like, oh, the phase of this is the equals the that of that or whatever. Like, I'm just like, I know what sounds good. I know how to make it sound good. If not, I'll experiment and I'll figure it out. Like, I enjoy that experimental side of it too. Like, oh, if I move this mic here, it'll sound better or won't, and I'll move it back. Do you know what I mean? That kind of...
Yeah, for sure. And what about producing, like, bands? Is that something that you've thought about?
It's what I wanted to do, like I back at university, but I never found that stride as such. The touring came and took over.
This is it. And obviously when then lockdown hits, touring stops, is that when you're starting to think on your feet of what you can do and this new concept comes up?
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess touring stopped. As we all, I didn't think it was going to be long. You know what I mean? I was like, I had a tour with Cancer Bats in April, and obviously things kind of stopped in March, and I was like, oh, maybe my April tour won't happen. It was Cancer Bats supporting Terror, so I was like, I'm excited about this. This is going to be a fun one. And then I was like, oh, maybe it won't. But I had a tour in May with Polaris, you know, that Australian band. And I was like, surely that's definitely going to happen. And then I had a tour in June or July with Silverstein. And I was like, that's definitely going to happen. There's no question about that. And then April went, May went, June went. And I was like, I'm going to have to do something here because I don't know how long this is going to last now. Going to start happening. Yeah, as you say, think on your feet. And what am I going to do? Like, I manage a few bands, but my income from that is them touring as well. So kind of that went out the window. So I've always had messages on stuff on Instagram or social being like, can I come to a show and learn or shadow? Just as I did when I started, can I come and learn and shadow? And I was like, how can we help this and do this? Which is like where Sonic Workshops came from. So a guy called George, who is the production manager of the University in Brighton, Water Bear.
Cool.
He came with me with a record label that he wanted to start and with a couple of questions about that. And I was like, I don't know the answers, but I certainly know people that do know the answers. I'll put you in touch.
Yeah.
And then all of that kind of came around and was like, we have the contacts between us. I have these contacts. You have those that can answer most of these questions that people have, whether it's about labels, whether it's about touring, whether it's about putting your next single out on Spotify and all these kind of things. Let's put this as a platform that people can use to learn. So I think that was like a conversation in June because I was like, there's no way that I'm going back to touring in the next 6 months.
Yeah.
And we launched Sonic Workshops in August with six mentors. So they were me covering touring, George covering like studio production stuff, a guy called Thomas that does label stuff, a guy called Jar doing social media and pictures if you wanted to do a tour photography, a guy called Sam, who you might know, he's a Brighton guy in Orchards band.
Yeah, so he, like, Orchards, I don't them. Know Sam personally. Yeah.
So nice. Yeah, him, and then a guy called Nick, who did like films and commercials, music and stuff.
Awesome.
So kind of like a long list, not that long, six people, but a broad list of people covering. So that's how we launched. And then people reached out to me about wanting to help or just how did you get involved? That was a lot of my questions, first of all. And I was like, it's actually me. Like, and they were like, oh, sick. And now we've got 25 mentors.
Whoa, that's awesome.
Which is
that's
crazy,
so cool.
Really. Yeah, and like everything from going back to Cancer Bats Scobe, the guitar player, is on there.
That's so
and
cool.
You can learn guitar lessons from him. Or he's actually does a lot of mixing and mastering. You can learn that from him. Paul Mark from Silverstein is on there. You can learn songwriting. Or if you're struggling as a songwriter, he'll help you with some of your like...
That's really cool.
A guy called Alex, who's the monitor engineer for Dual Leaper, if you want to learn to be a monitor engineer. And it kind of grew really quick in that way of these people. At the beginning, I was like, we've got more mentors than clients right now. But obviously that's changed now. We've actually got quite a few people. Like, I had two sessions this morning before this podcast with people. I've got another one this afternoon. I got a busy day today.
That's really cool.
But it's great. Like, I love being busy. Like, it's funny. So when I swear when I was like 20, I did not like being busy. I wanted to sit and do nothing all day. And my dad was always like, are you going to do something? And now I'm like, I can't not do something. Like, I'm always doing like.
That's it. No, I think it's a good way to be. And especially at the moment, I think it's something that's kept a lot of people sane. Just.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Like. Yeah, the mental health thing that this pandemic has created is a whole other conversation, obviously, but it's bad. Like, I think like people are struggling, and I feel like what's kept me, that's helped me a lot, is being productive and like, and trying to stay fit too. That's something I tried to do. Started to go on runs.
I think it's something that, I've seen with a lot of the people I've talked to that like it's helped them. And it's a weird one as well, because I think a lot of people who tour for a living have some kind of relationship with mental health anyway. And
yeah,
especially people who play in punk rock bands.
yeah.
So when it's all stopped, it's like being alone with those demons for such a long period of time is something that a lot of people hadn't had to deal with, really.
Yeah, because when you're on tour, you're constantly with people, right?
Yeah.
Like 24/7. Sometimes it's like the opposite. You want to get away and you actually just want to sit on your own. Infinitely. And like there's many times I've just gone for a walk and be like, I just need some quiet. I really do.
Well, this is like, it. I think people find coping mechanisms on tour and then none of those coping mechanisms work anymore because it's the complete opposite.
It's the complete opposite, especially now. Like my coping mechanism now would be go and hang out and have a couple of drinks with all my friends.
This is it.
Yeah.
I love what you're doing with Sonic Workshops. And I think it's really important. Something that I talk a lot about on the podcast is the business side of the music scene and how a lot of people who get into the concept of playing in a band or doing anything related to it haven't necessarily come from a business background or even love the concept of business in general.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's so important to teach these things within the scope of the arts, like in general. Yeah, I think I'm really excited to see it grow.
Yeah, like, yeah, because you're an artist, you're playing, you don't care really about the business side of it, do you? But you have to.
This is it. And
yeah,
and especially if you're like an indie band starting out, it's become everything. You need to do your own marketing, you need to do your own social media, your own PR, and if you don't, it's very little you can get.
Yeah, like I've said, yeah, you can write the best song in the world, but if no one listens to it, what's the point? That sounds like a really horrible sentence, but you know what I mean. And then that's where all that comes in. Yeah
for sure. And yeah, there's levels, right? I completely get people just wanting to write their own songs and sit at home because they find pleasure out of that.
Absolutely, yeah.
But if you're getting five people together trying to do a band and you don't know how to do any of the business side of it, then it's going to be very frustrating. You're going to get annoyed.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, that Sonic Workshops can help. Hopefully, that was our main audience, but smaller bands that didn't know how to kind of get going, like get out of their local scene, maybe to the next town, or even put their stuff on Spotify.
Like, and is that what you've seen? Is that the audience you are getting?
There's definitely a couple of bands and stuff that we've already seen grow, which is great. I've had quite a few people interested in learning how to be a tour manager. Like, because I made like a tour management course on there that's like 11 weeks long, and it dives like right into the little contracts and all that music business side.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people studying music, like music industries or music business or whatever at university that are coming, which is really cool.
That's awesome.
So,
and what about what's going on with, not to get too dark or down, but with what's going on with Brexit? Do you think the amount of work in the UK is going to change, or do you think there's reason to look into other countries for work with that?
Yeah, I feel like they're still figuring it out, aren't they?
This is it.
Like,
we don't imagine, know
yeah. Like I always said, imagine. Obviously, there was the 1st of January where those new rules came in. Imagine if COVID wasn't happening and there was a tour going to Europe on the 2nd of January or the 3rd of January. No one would have known what to do.
This is it,
like, not even the border guard. So they would have got there and they'd be like, I don't know if you're what you need.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't know if they still do. Like, obviously, when it all comes, I'll read into it a lot more.
Oh, they don't. They don't, because I'm waiting for my my EU settlement scheme because I'm from the Canaries. And I'm afraid of like leaving to go to Barcelona at the moment because there's loads of cases where, because they don't know that it's just till June, they're like, oh no, you can't come in because you haven't got. And it's like, no, I can because it's not till June.
I live here.
Yeah. So my house is there. I work there till June. Like, it's madness.
What a mess.
It's madness. But I think it's another, and it is a horrible situation, obviously, but it is another one of these things where it's good to be able to think on your feet. And I think there will always be solutions we can find to make things work, you know. It's just
loopholes.
This is it. Like, get smart with it. And we've got, and I actually mean that, as in, like, you know, we've got access to the internet. We can get really smart at law if we need to get smart at like working around the legal system. We've got access to it.
There's got to be something. Obviously, a Khan A is a given now, unfortunately. Yeah. But yeah, wasn't there some rule like 60 or 90 days in and out of countries? I don't really. Yeah.
Again, it's one of these things that when it becomes something I need to deal with, I'll read into it.
Exactly. More. Yeah.
And that, yeah, the information just isn't there at the moment. But I think it's good to get an idea of how people within the industry are feeling, because it can cause a lot of stress, you know, like not knowing.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's it. The unknown. That's just the whole last year has been, isn't it? The unknown.
Yeah. This is it. It was like already
everything.
Bad.
Literally like, everything. Here you go,
some
yeah.
More.
Yeah. What I find is funny. So I found myself working for primarily American or Canadian bands.
Yeah.
And they come over to Europe and Germany and they don't need anything. They don't need any visa. They just kind of land, show they're on tour, and they're good to go. Come into UK, they need like a little COS, COS paperwork or whatever that's pretty easy to get. And then we're going to go over to Germany and need a visa? Surely not.
I'm not sure.
I don't. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, it just doesn't make sense that an American or Canadian can come over and not need anything.
Yeah. It's odd.
So
when did Tandem Management... Just to switch topics from depressing matters, Tandem Management come into the conversation with you.
Yeah, so I worked after Cancer Bats, I guess, to start there. I was introduced to Silverstein.
Yeah.
Because they're from the same town. And that was my first introduction to tour management, was through Silverstein. So I went on tour with them, thrown myself in the deep end again, never knew TM before, and I was like, I could figure it out, and I guess I did. And they invited me to America. That was my first tour in America, and I ended up working for them for like 6 years.
Oh, awesome.
And they were a self-managed band, so their drummer managed them.
Oh,
he was
so
their like, talking about the business side of everything, he was their business everything. And him and a guy called Rich, who I met through them, and he also had at that time had a label, or was the production manager or head of the label, I don't know his actual term, for New Damage, which is a Canadian label that's just like a Dine Alone, was its like head, which is like Alexis on Fire, City in
nice,
Color,
yeah,
all that.
Yeah.
So he was, and those two together started a management company, Tandem.
Oh, nice.
So Rich has Seaway. He manages Seaway, yeah. Protest the Hero, kind of all them. And then Paul had Silverstein, obviously. And then he picked up a couple of other bands like Trash Boat from the UK,
nice,
he
yeah.
does now. So that was Tandem, those two. And obviously me being on tour with Silverstein and dealing with Paul a lot as the tour manager and him as the manager, we obviously had a good relationship in that way of working. And I kind of just asked him and Rich, can I be involved in some way?
Yeah.
I just want to learn. I want to like just be your assistant, essentially. Like, and just help and learn as I went. Because touring, I don't want to be touring until I'm retired, I guess, till I'm 50. So I feel like band management was also kind of a way out of that, to then have a family, to kind of settle down and all that kind of stuff, but still be involved in music. Like, I always want to be involved in music. I've always loved it. I don't want to do anything else. And that just felt like the logical step. So yeah, I had a couple of bands come to me then and asked to manage them. I had some friends that came to me and said, yeah, Rich asked me to manage a couple of bands with him. And it's all just kind of grown. And I do River Becomes Ocean now, which is from Brighton, a bunch of mainly Germans, but they're from Brighton, great guys. Heart of Gold is a newer one that I picked up, which is Michael from Being as an Ocean, which is really good, like working on some really good stuff right now, to be honest. Like, I think it's going to do great. And a band called Limbs from the US, like a hardcore, which was actually great to tour with them. January last year, I got them on the Beartooth tour, and they opened up a US Beartooth tour, which was really good. So I've learned so much from that too. Again, I threw myself in the deep end, and I just learned as I went, and I'm still learning, which is great. Like, I always want to be learning new things and like figuring out labels, ins and outs when putting out a new record and all that kind of stuff. So I guess that's a really long answer to your question.
Yeah, that's great. And I find it really interesting because you've picked out a few things there that I think are really good tips when people want to get into anything really, but especially music. And I'll touch on them in a sec, but are you the kind of person that looks, that kind of thinks back on what you've done and tries to pick out the things that worked and replicate them, if that makes any sense?
Yeah, I guess yes, without thinking about it in a way. That sounds really weird, but yeah. And I've definitely gone back and said, oh, I wish I didn't do that, or I shouldn't have said that message or whatever, but haven't we all?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And I find like, that yeah. when you mentioned about asking if you could do anything in tandem, like
yeah,
just wanting to learn, I think that's something that can easily be overlooked, you know, especially at the moment. It's people want to take the easy route, and it's really easy to send 100 emails without having like any connection or done like anything beforehand, and then get that you haven't had a good.
But then I've been in that. I've spoken to people in that situation that want to do that, but haven't had any of that experience before. And I always say, still send that email. You never know.
For like, sure. But then it comes around to like knowing how to send a professional email and like
email. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
That's what's good about the music industry in a way, though. Like, I feel like my emails are never that professional. Maybe they should be. But I always feel like I always feel like myself, I'm a quite a relaxed person, and my emails, I want to portray that too. So I'm just like, hey man, how's it going? I don't want to be like, dear sir and madam.
No, for sure. For sure.
They're just going to read it and be like, who's this kid?
And I think, again, I think that's part of it, isn't it? It's knowing who you're talking to.
Yeah.
And adapting like emails to, like, I often find that even if you take that same, because obviously then there's the other side of it, of being productive and not spending ages. No one's got time to send 100 amazing emails that are all unique. But, you know, it's very easy to write an email and leave enough space to go research the person and target it to that person.
And I think that goes a long way. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
This is it.
Rather than just, dear sir, whom it may concern or whatever. Like, find their name.
Yeah, that's it. Was there anything when you started managing the bands that you found like surprising to have to deal with or that you weren't expecting?
I guess little like not fallings out, but drama within a band. I always felt like the dad that someone came like, oh, so and so said this or really? He's done that. Not to that extent, but kind of like there's always going to be a disagreement of some sort. That's what opinions are, isn't it? One person is going to prefer that, or one person wants to do this tour, one person doesn't. And I always felt like I was the person, which is their job role, I guess, isn't it? The final decision, and I feel like I have to take a side. So I guess that kind of threw me sometimes. I was like, I'm not your dad. Wait, maybe this case I actually should be. Like, do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, are you almost thrown into like being part of that relationship structure that a band has? Because that's...
Absolutely,
really weird. That must feel
like another extra mem... Yeah, like a not... Especially when it comes to mixes too. I've been asked for, what's your opinion on the mix? And obviously I have an opinion, but... Is it up to me? Because it's your band. But yeah, like I'm going to give you what I think. And yeah.
Yeah.
So that side of it definitely took me by surprise. And that I thought it was just going to be more of like a liaison between everyone and be like, oh, the booking agent and the label. And I'm going to talk to everyone, relay that information back to the band, and then take that information and relay it back kind of. But it's a lot more than that, which is fun. It's enjoyable, obviously, for sure. But it's hard. Like there's no
imagine like it must be stressful as well, and this goes for tour managing as well, because you're trying to keep the band in a good mood, and if you can see that start to shift, it must be quite a stressful situation to try and deal with.
Yeah, especially like some situations that have happened, I've been like, yeah, I could feel everybody out stressing, but you've got to stay calm because you're the head as such. If you're stressed, everyone's going to be stressed.
Yeah.
So I remember some situations, we've missed flights, we've had a flight cancelled, I had someone lose their passport in Brazil, and like like that. It's stressful situations, yeah. But I've always tried to stay calm. Like even inside, I'm like maybe boiling up.
And yeah, because you must have seen like you must be around people that are snapping sometimes. Like that good at keeping it calm.
No, it's just kind of have to take it, I guess. The same as any, yeah, or walk out and come back.
Were you always good at like keeping calm?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think it's only in touring situations. Someone asked me a couple of days ago, if you are stressed, what do you do to kind of calm? And I'm always like, take a step back and be like, I'm here. Like, I'm in Brazil, say, pick that situation up. Who cares that they've lost their passport? I'm not going to stress. I'm in Brazil and I'm getting paid to be here. There's way worse situations that I could be in. Yes, this is a stressful situation that someone's lost their passport and they might not get home, but we'll figure it out. And I feel like I can't think when I'm stressing.
Well, this is
it. You know what I mean? Like, you start stressing, my mind isn't going to get a solution. It's just going to go over what's happened over and over again in my head, and I'm not going to get to that solution. But I don't know, maybe I'm weird in that way.
I think it's a really, you've built a good habit. You've built a good habit. And sometimes that's out of needing to, you know, like if you're on tour and something goes wrong and you're in charge of fixing that situation, your body almost goes into like fight or flight. You're like, cool, I need to sort this out. That's a really good way to be.
I remember Silverstein, the first time I ever met them, was in like Zurich airport, and we had to wait like 2 hours for the bus to come and pick us up. And we all went out for some dinner and we had a couple of bottles of wine. And I was obviously nervous meeting these people for the first time, as anyone would, obviously trying to make a good impression and be organized and perfect, everything like that. But obviously I had a couple of glasses of wine. I wanted to relax.
Yeah.
I could feel it in my head and such. Like it was... And then I had a message that the bus had crashed or broken down and it wasn't going to be there till tomorrow. And that was like, this was my first time TMing. And I think that was my first time of being like, holy crap. Like, and I never sobered up as quick. I swear within like 5 minutes, I felt like I hadn't had a drop of alcohol in me. And yeah. I was like trying to figure out what to do. I can't remember. I think we got a hotel and I charged it back to the bus company or something like that. But that's the first time I think I remember feeling stress, but having to deal with it in a way.
And that's not a small amount of stress. That's like, that's a big thing to sort out, you know, for most people.
Yeah, I think the band were pretty relaxed about it, which helps too. Definitely. Like obviously if they start worrying and then it's just a vicious circle, isn't it? And if you start worrying, that can be the start of that vicious circle. Like it's all, like...
Yeah, you freak out and everyone else is like, oh, crap.
Yeah.
How do you feel about when you get back off tours? Do you cope well with that? Do you get ill physically or anything like that?
I always feel like I do get ill when I come back from a tour. I do. And I honestly think, I said this a couple of days ago too, when you're, no matter how long the tour is, I swear like 2 days before the end, I feel I'm ready to go home. I feel like it's just psychological, isn't it? If the tour is 6 weeks long, I've been absolutely fine until the second day before I finish. If the tour is 5 days long, 2 days before, I'm like, I'm ready to go home. It's all in your head, isn't it? Yeah. So, and when I get home, it's definitely like a low, isn't there? Like you've been around.
Oh, yeah.
Thing so much, and I think obviously helping, I have a girlfriend that I haven't seen in 6 weeks, obviously that's a high to come home to and see that, and then obviously it's an adjustment for me and for her to obviously we were living together in Brighton and she was on her own for 6 weeks, and then I come home and there's suddenly another person in the flat, so it's kind of adjustment to that, and then for me too to like a complete different scenario, we've even like kind of interacting with people obviously, which again has been a positive to come from COVID. Like I've never spent as much time with my girlfriend and it's great. It also makes me scared to go away again in that sense of things, like after having, it's just a change, isn't it? That's all it is, isn't it? A change of one thing to another, and it's an extreme to another.
I found it difficult with that, and especially like, not to obviously go too deep into it, but when you have a partner, like going on tour and coming back and then going over that again when you know the difficulties that come, like that it includes, yeah, is pretty stressful, like adapting to do, like.
Yeah, and it's never going to change, is it? It's never going to get easier, really. That's the thing. You can't be like, oh, it'd be better next time. No, it probably won't.
And it becomes hard. Yeah, but I think it is something that becomes a bit difficult when you've had a break from it for a while, because it's obviously comfortable. You get comfortable and it's like, yeah, you know you're having to break that.
It's a routine, isn't it? You get a routine on tour, you get a routine at home.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and breaking that routine.
And the getting ill off tour, like, I think your body crashes. And that, again, in a relationship can be tough, you know. You've been away for 6 weeks and you get back and then you're ill for 3 days.
And I'm shattered, yeah, absolutely shattered.
Can't do anything, sort of sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah, do you want to go out for dinner tonight? It's like,
Yeah. We had a funny conversation once. We were talking about obviously going on holiday somewhere. And she was like, oh, that's like rent a van and drive around Europe. I'm like, that's exactly what I've just done.
That's not holiday, like, that's work.
Yeah, I get that it's going to be different. Of course I do. Like, we actually can choose that we're going to stay in this town for a little longer, or we don't have a bus call. But it was just funny.
I enjoy getting in a van and driving around still. Even like, I there's something about that.
I would too. Like, yeah, yeah, absolutely.
But
yeah,
but there is that, like, if you've just come back off tour, it's not what you want to hear.
No, I just thought it was funny. There's also funny to tell more funny stories, I guess. You're sitting chatting to your girlfriend, whoever, on a text, and like, what are you doing? Nothing. Just sat backstage. Like, there's really not much to do. We're in the middle of nowhere. And she's like, really? You're just doing nothing? I was like, I'm just chilling. Honestly, there's nothing going on. And I'm sure you know that. There's not always, yeah. So she came out to a Warped Tour. So she flew over to, I think it was Vegas, and the whole tour again, she was like, what are you doing on Warped Tour? I was like, nothing. We're in the middle of a parking lot in the middle of nowhere. I'm just sat here. She comes out 2 days after she's there. We hire a yacht and go out on a yacht. And I'm like, I promise you, this isn't what we're doing. Or no, it was a limo this time. This sounds like it's a crazy story, but this time was like, basically we did this like Silvertooth thing where both bands played together. We made t-shirts,
so cool,
and the profit from the t-shirts we kind of used for, yeah, something fun. And it just happened to be the one time that she came over, this is what we did. And I'm like, I promise this isn't what it's like every time.
Yeah. Yeah, Jane had that, the opposite scenario. She came on an acoustic tour with me once, and I did what I always do, which is stay up till 3 o'clock in the morning drinking beers. And by day three, she was like, I can't do this. Like, like the absolute worst one was when we did Europe and we played a gig in Brighton and left Brighton, drove straight to Amsterdam, drank all day, and then played a gig that night in Amsterdam. Right. And I've never felt so rough. Like, swear I was hallucinating. I was not good.
I mean, in Amsterdam, maybe you were.
Well, no, yeah. Unfortunately, no. I think it was just the lack of sleep in that situation. But yeah, do you try and keep healthy when you're out? Do you try and get enough sleep and stuff?
I do. It's sometimes hard, though. But yeah, no. I think FOMO for me is such a thing on tour. I have such a fear of missing out. Like, I know it's a bad thing, but if a bunch of people are at a bar, I can't just go to bed.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to want to go and have fun. Like, I'm just, yeah. Because something great might happen and then I'll be the next thing that everyone talks about. And I'll be like, oh, I missed out. But since I've got older, I guess there's definitely times that I haven't. Especially on one tour, I think it was the last Beartooth tour. We loaded in at like 9 a.m. and I wouldn't finish until like 1. So it's a long day.
Yeah.
And it comes to 1 a.m. and I am falling asleep. Like, I can't. If I went to the bar, I'd be asleep at the bar.
Yeah.
So there's times that I've definitely been like, I need to go to sleep. But there's also times that I need to go to sleep and I haven't.
Yeah. Are you a big drinker on tour?
I'm not a big drinker, but I'll definitely have a couple of drinks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but like, there's a difference. There's like, some people smash it on tour. You know,
yeah,
what I mean?
No.
Like, and that
I get such bad hangovers. I can't even say it. That's how bad they are. So that's all that's in my head. Like, tomorrow is going to be so bad, I can't.
Yeah.
But I do enjoy it, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah, same. That's what started changing. I used to I used to not get hangovers. I used to.
Yeah, me too.
But now the problem is I get a really big hangover, but I wake up really early. I'm always awake at like 7. I wake up at 7 and it doesn't matter if I've gone to bed at 6. Like, I will be wide awake with the worst hangover.
That's the worst. Yeah, let me sleep.
Yeah, it's horrible. Do you.
It comes the thing where Roadie Friday like is. Yeah, I'll stay up then.
Yeah, yeah.
I know I don't have to get up tomorrow. I'll celebrate in that way.
choose your fights, right?
Exactly, yeah.
That's it. And choose your alcohol as well, because they're not all the same.
It's true. And I definitely feel like beer is always kind of my go-to.
Yeah.
But it is not good for you. It really isn't. Like, I've come back from a tour and I was like, I've drank way too much beer. Like, but then I'm not a fan of, I can't drink vodka. Like, whiskey I'll have a little bit, but it gives you a different drunk too, doesn't it? Like,
yeah, you don't want to be crying on tour all the time. There's enough of that going on.
Yeah, that's great.
No, for sure. I think it was Sam Dabb from Le Pub said to me once, because I was like, oh, I'm getting real bad hangovers every time like I drink beer at the moment. She's like, oh, you just have to change alcohol every 6 months and then you don't get hangovers. Does not work.
Interesting.
But if you want to try,
I kind of get it. Like, you change what, yeah, is giving you the hangovers, and your body thinks it's a fresh. Nah, it's not going to work, is it? I'm trying to convince myself.
It might
somehow
work for someone else.
Yeah,
but I think actually it's just something to convince you to keep drinking.
Yeah. Did it work? Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. You mentioned you're doing exercise to help. Is that something you'd started before lockdown or you found at the moment?
In lockdown, I guess. I've always, on tour, on a day off, I will try my hardest to go to a hotel gym or especially a walk.
Yeah.
But especially as we just mentioned, if it's Roadie Friday and I had a couple of drinks the night before, the last thing I want to do on a day off is go to the gym.
Yeah, for sure.
But during lockdown, it's definitely something I've done more. Like, during the countryside, walking, running. I even got a kettlebell.
Nice.
I'm actually trying to, in March, do like now 100 miles in March.
Oh, rad.
Which is like for WWF.
Oh, nice.
Like, I can't exactly what it's for. I should probably look into it more. But I'm like, what are we now? 15th of March, and I'm like 45 miles of 100. So I'm about halfway and about
that's
halfway.
Really
so I'm
cool.
It's just walking. But around here in Cornwall, the cliffs and the cliff pass is pretty epic, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like,
Cornwall's beautiful. I love it. Like,
it is, yeah. If it was warmer, it'd be even better. But
I know. I have tried convincing Jane to look at houses around there, but I think the idea of, like, she doesn't know it that well, and not, like, it's quite far from things. She's like, it's
yeah,
quite far
that's
from
it.
Things. Like,
yeah, it
it's
really
beautiful.
Is.
I like
London
being
is
far
a,
from things.
Yeah. London's a 5-hour train journey. It's like, oh. I've said that to some people, and they're like, England's that big.
And it's still nothing in comparison to other countries.
No, like America, they'll do that for a show.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah.
Yeah, I've got friends in Canada that do that kind of stuff just to go to a house party.
Oh, you have to in Canada. It's, yeah, just to the shop.
Yeah, it's funny. Have you ever looked into yoga?
Yes, and I'm terrible. My girlfriend does it, and she's like getting a lot better at it. I think she started during lockdown too, kind of, but I think it's my posture. And I mean, that's why I should do it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. For sure. I'm the same. My back kills, like, but trying to, like, stand straight. But
like, I've tried it, definitely tried it, but
as you can tell, I'm like leaning over. I said that and we both adjusted in our crap. Yeah. No, but it's really been helping me. And I think on tour, I discovered it like the last two tours I did, and it really helped me just not doing a proper yoga session whilst out on tour or anything, but just knowing what bits to like stretch out and get in the place, and like a few things that but yeah, I had someone come on the show and they were like a neurodevelopment expert. It's just to do with like your body and movement and all that kind of stuff. She said that even dancing every day is like one of the best things you can do just for your body to like reset itself and like helps your mood and everything, just like moving around.
That's it. Helps your mood, I think, is the main this thing, isn't it? It just frees your mind that little bit to either go back to work with a fresh head or just kind of feel good about yourself.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that there's, I think there's loads of things we don't realize are going on with that stuff. You know, when you're in a van, you're like cramped up, like, and your body's in a certain way, and that stuff affects, like, and you, your brain builds habits. So then when you're not on a bus, your body's still cramped
you're
up
still
and
sat like
just like pushing you.
Yeah. Like sleep in a bunk or curled up. I'd probably do that now still in my bed, to be honest.
I was homeless in London for a few years, dude. And I found that, like, for years afterwards, like, I'd sleep in a certain way because of how I was used to. And it was like throwing my hip off placement. It was like doing loads of bad stuff and not aware of it. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, it's wild. I chatted to Miguel from Teenage Bottle Rocket.
The
bassist, and he does like loads of yoga, and he's written like books about it and stuff. He's got this thing called Yoga for Punks that he does at Warp Tour. Like, well, he was doing
it. I was going to say, Warp Tour did some yoga stuff. There was some guy from Our Last Night doing something, I think, and probably this guy too then. Yeah. That's awesome.
No, it's cool. And I like chatting. Like, it's just good to see, like, not everyone does exercise at all whilst like you know what I mean. Punk rock is notorious for for like people drinking too much and not doing like jack shit other than going on stage for 30 minutes.
Someone said something to me once, I work out so I can drink. And I was like, I like that.
That sounds like Dan from Zebrahead. He was like that. He was like, he boxes every day, but then he's like, that's just so I can keep drinking.
So I mean, at least he's doing something about it, I guess. If he kept drinking, there wasn't boxing.
Yeah, for sure. Danny, it's been so good getting to catch up.
Yeah, definitely.
And chat about what you're up to. And I'm really excited to see what Sonic Workshops like continues to do, because it sounds amazing.
Hopefully when tours start back up again, we can actually hold workshops at shows.
That would be so cool.
Which I think, so someone wanting to learn to sound engineer can come to the show.
Yeah,
and
that sounds
amazing. Watch the sound check. Yeah, hopefully whenever that will be. I'm crossing my fingers, hopefully soon.
Yeah, I hope so too. Is there anything you want to plug? Any links you want me to add in the bio before we wrap
I guess
up?
The Sonic Workshops, just sonicworkshops.co.uk.
Nice.
Easy. Straight
there.
To the
that
point.
Will be there. Yeah, for sure. For sure. Danny, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. Hell yeah.
Thank you so much for checking out that episode of the podcast. I really do hope you enjoyed it. Thank you so much to Danny for coming on. All the links for the stuff he's been getting up to is underneath. Go check it out. Leave us a review if you use Apple Podcasts. Give us a follow if you're on Spotify. If you're on anything else, just reach out, say hello. That is super encouraging. Share it about, tell your mates, all that good stuff. And if you really want to show us some support, you can buy me a coffee. Link is in the bio. Check out some of the other episodes we've released. We've got a bunch of good ones. And if you're into the idea of getting involved in the music industry somehow, then a couple of good ones to look out for are The Big Scary Monsters and Beth Shalom Records, where I chat to both those independent record labels who are doing a lot for the UK music scene. So yeah, enjoy. I will catch you soon. Take it easy.